Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that 5-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 0.035% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75, 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching never changed anything.
Today's podcast is titled, Don Lemon, Was He Right About Homegrown Terrorism? Once again, Don Lemon, was he right about homegrown terrorism? Live stream number 619-768-2945. We'll be back in a couple of minutes to see what you guys think.
How it go?
We got one out of two of them motherfuckers, you know?
You mean you motherfuckers come strolling in here all walking tall and shit?
We'll be out, man. I'm saying, man, we was blazing on them dudes, man. You know what I'm saying? Just got in the heat, man. We was blazing, though. It was late.
All right. Relax, man. I already heard. Go sit down. I'm not tweaking behind none of this. That's one less motherfucker that's breathing than was yesterday. You know what I'm saying? So we all good. But I'm surprised at you, though, man. Shit didn't get by you back when.
Well, my man's fault, man. I unloaded on the younger too soon, man. Gave him enough room to buck and run, man. I fucked that shit up myself, you know?
Hold on. It's on me. I had that kid in my sights. Close enough to take off his Kango and half his dome with it. Couldn't squeeze the trigger. Couldn't do it, man.
Why not?
Wasn't in me, I guess. You know, whatever it is in you that lets you flow like you flow and do that thing, it ain't in me no more.
All right. So you done soldiering, but you ain't done. Could use you for what you got in your head. We're going to put you on a corner. You could be inside.
Oh, man. I ain't making myself clear. The game ain't in me no more. None of it.
But you ain't done shit else. You know what I'm saying? So what you going to do?
I don't know. But it can't be this.
All right, then. We straight.
Man in his time, you know?
Yeah. He a man today. He a man.
And today's podcast is titled, Don Lemon, Was He Right About Homegrown Terrorists? 619-768-2945 is the live stream number. Don Lemon, to some people, he's made a controversial statement. For some people, the way they heard it, Don Lemon says that the white man don't quote me on this. I'm paraphrasing. Is the one to look out for as far as homegrown terrorism here in the United States. Now, the audio I heard him say, normally I play an audio of a person actually saying what they're saying, but I got a brand new Chromebook here. So I'm paranoid of transferring audio on it because I don't want to get messed up. When I get my other regular Chromebook operating system going again, you know, I'll run this podcast with maybe two Chromebooks. One strictly for audio, playing audio. So anyway, now the audio that I listened to a few hours ago, Don Lemon said, he used the term, and granted there are other different sound bites. I'm just going by the one I actually did hear. I'm not reading what somebody else wrote. He said, homegrown terrorists, man. You could have said white men and something else that I didn't hear. But what I heard in a particular specific sound bite, he used homegrown terrorists. And there are a number of them. And before I go into this, this country, the United States, is so, man, we're overdosed on judging things by strictly color. Although, and depends on the situation, you might be justified in that judgment. That's a very subjective thing, depending on who you're talking to. Anyway, but when you look at the Unabomber, Timothy McVeigh, the guy Nichols that got convicted with McVeigh, Dylan Roof going into the church with some black folks, sitting in there with some black folks so they can get all. They were very relaxed, very relaxed. He didn't come in there blazing. Dylan Roof came in there, sat down, probably said a couple of thank you Jesuses in the process. Praise the Lord in the process. But maybe he sang it. I don't know what he did up in there. But he was in there long enough, totally, totally caught off guard. Shattered, white dude. Let's see. The Columbine killings. Those two guys. What was the dude's name? He had a Dylan in that one, too. Anyway. So there's a poster or something floating around the internet with all these white homegrown terrorists. But is terrorism in this country homegrown terrorism? Because the KKK, they're a terror group too. That's a homegrown terror group. But never put on the terror watch list. Anyway, so is terrorism in this country, homegrown terrorism in this country, is it highly based on race? Because the majority of your homegrown white terrorists basically terrorize other white folks. There's some exceptions, like Dylan Roof. He went into a black church and was all black people there. Whereas Timothy McVeigh, he went to a government building where it was mostly white folks. There was everybody in there. It was, Oklahoma City. You got Native Americans up in there, that neck of woods. You do have Native Americans. You had black, Latino. Everybody's in there, but mostly white folks. The Columbine thing, Columbine, that high school, mostly white folks. There was one white, black kid that was killed in that whole massacre. Virginia Tech, well, that was an Asian. So, and then I played that piece right before I got on live here. In The Wire, that, although that was, it was based on real, loosely based on some real people, let's say with a fictional plot. But a lot of black homegrown terrorism that happens in various neighborhoods, it's just typically black on black. Even the Crips and the Bloods. They're essentially, now to my knowledge, I'm just one person. I don't follow their history and their contemporary goings on. But the Crips and the Bloods, black gangs, for the most part. They probably have some Latinos in there. But for the most part, African-American gangs here in the United States, for the most part, black gangs don't threaten white people. They don't beat up white people. They don't deal drugs to white people, overly, though. But let a black person, a fellow African-American, say something they consider sideways, they'll F him up. But the Crips and Bloods, white people don't have no, They're homegrown terrorists within the black community. And I know I'm probably getting called a coon for that. But name an incident where the Crips and Bloods have beat up, terrorized white folks. The point I'm making is terrorism and homegrown terrorism in the United States seems to be polarized. White folks essentially terrorize other, they terrorize within their comfort zone. And black folks terrorize within their comfort zone. And Latinos primarily, you know, the gang people, they terrorize within their comfort zone. Going back to now, like Don Lemon, let me go before I open up the phone. The statement I heard Don Lemon say was that we have an issue here in the United States with the term homegrown terrorism. All right. Now, other news clippings, headlines, YouTube videos, whatever, they have Don Lemon saying that, or they said that he said, the white man is the homegrown terrorist that we need to look out for. So, anyway, your comments on Don Lemon and those statements or anything dealing with homegrown terrorism, I'm just looking at it. It seems like I can't say that he lied. That's just my opinion. But I'm just taking it a step further. It seems like in the United States, homegrown terrorists seem to basically terrorize people in their home comfort zone. Anything from domestic violence to carjacking somebody that is within a one. You know what? I wonder if somebody's probably done a study on this. They probably have. This just popped my head. I think most people who you can label as a homegrown terrorist, thug, criminal, whatever you want to call them, they commit these crimes typically within a 1 square mile radius of where they lay their head at night. Because if you look at the riots, you know, urban unrest with the riots, essentially, you know, with the Ferguson thing, the Baltimore, you know, riots with the Freddie Gray, the 1968 riots with Martin Luther King, you didn't see white folks coming to the city and riot. These were blacks that basically could walk to the riot location and go back home. Some of them with their loot. Now, let's go to white folks. When they do stuff like that, you know, I'm just thinking out loud here. Typically, the rioters, no matter what color, and the homegrown terrorists, no matter what color, typically live about a one. They're not booking airplane tickets and doing cross-country flights and then, you know, blowing up something and going back home. There was one case of that last year that somebody flew from the West Coast, landed in the Fort Lauderdale Airport in Florida, and he had checked the gun. And I haven't heard anything about that case since, but he checked the gun. Then in the baggage claim, he got his luggage with the rifle in it or whatever and started shooting people. Other than that, this is just a theory of mine. I believe most homegrown terrorists live within a short distance of where they're created. I mean, Dylan Roof. He really didn't have to drive that far to do what he did. Anyway, Don Lemon, let's start off with him. Any thoughts you have? Was he right about homegrown terrorism, or was he right about, once again, I'm not sure that he said it. I've heard a lot of videos of people saying he said it. But if he did say it, was he correct in his assumption that the number one terrorist that we must be leery of in the United States are the white men? It is the white man. And as opposed to floating around on God, all over the net. of high-profile white guys that did us some killing. So let's go to 410 area code. What say you about Don Lemon?
As always, Brother L.A., I want to start off by giving honor to my master that gave me the Lord and Savior, my Lord and Savior and Messiah, Jesus Christ.
Okay.
For the redemption of my sin, because my sins were nailed to the cross when they hung him on the cross. I also want to thank my master for giving me my modern-day Messiah, my Savior, and the modern-day Jesus in the person of Donald Trump, who's here to bring us black folks out of the depths of despair and to take on our burden of poverty. And I want to say to all of those modern-day Pharisees, Sadducees, they go in the name of black conservatives and black liberals who are standing in the way of Donald Trump helping us out of our misery. I want to tell them to shut up and go to hell. And with that being said, you know, in my prior profession, I used to fly a lot. And after 9/11, all of us was talking in the office, and they said, you know, and whenever I see an Arab, or a person look like they're of Arab descent, I automatically go on alert because they're the ones that bun the tower. The tower's there in New York. And it was a bunch of us black folk in there. Well, one or two of us black people in there and a bunch of white folks, and they were talking. So they said, well, Beasley, what do you think when you start flying? I said, well, look, when I get on a plane and I see a person that's between the height of 5'7" and 6 feet tall with blonde hair and blue eyes, I automatically get scared because those are the ones that I've seen in my lifetime to be the biggest terrorists in America, and they shut the hell up. With that being said, you know, well, you probably won't admit it, but all of the acts of terrorism that has been produced and that has been carried out in the United States have been white males. And I don't know if you looked at last week, when those Jews was talking on TV about what happened in Pittsburgh, they said that the terrorist was white nationalists, which is another word for white racists and bigots. No one contradicted them. No one challenged them. I didn't hear not one black conservative or one white conservative push back on that statement. They said that the Jews was suffering from anti-Semitism. And this anti-Semitism was as a result of Donald Trump saying what he was saying and stirring up these white nationalists. I didn't hear not one black person or one white person say a darn thing and challenge them on it. Now, when it comes to Jews, nobody says a word. They were terrorized. When black folks say something, then all of a sudden say, no, it wasn't racism. Well, anti-Semitism is their equal part of saying racist. And some of them came out and said racist, but no one said a darn word. So if you look at all of the things that we black folks have experienced over the years, we paid a hell of a cost when it comes to terrorism. And most of it, if not all of it, was carried out by white folk. Now, whether you agree with this or not, that's on you. But the facts are there. And every time I tell you something, I can back it up with a fact. Now, if there's some Uncle Stevens out there, Uncle Steven Oreos, and that Uncle Stevens I'm talking about, that character that was on Django Unchained. I don't use Uncle Tom no more. I use Uncle Steven because he's more appropriate. If they want to push back on that, they can. But let me give you this, and I know I'm going to get some pushback from you on this. I saw on YouTube, you can pull it up, he was a black agent, said that what they did back in the days of the 60s and 70s, they were paid by the government to go up and stir up trouble and violence between the different black nationalist groups or the black militant groups, to go in and create a atmosphere of war and everything else. And they carried out some assassinations in the name of those groups to go ahead on and make sure that they were fighting one another. And with that being said, I don't know if you ever heard of Highway Ricky Ross or not, but
yep,
Highway Ricky Ross, where he said that it was the CIA that supplied him with all of the crack that is infesting our neighborhoods, not infesting the rest of the United States. It was the CIA, and they paid for the war that they was carrying out against the Compton's. And with that being said, you can look it up if you want to. The guy that wrote Spook Who Sat by the Door, he said his job was to go in and be a liaison between the government and those gangs there in Chicago, and he refused to do it, but some people did, and what they did was they pitted those gangs, the Blackstone Rangers, the gangsters, the Disciples, and all of that stuff against one another and created a war between those guys. Now, whether he was lying or not, he worked for the Defense Information Agency or something like that, but now he said it on record. And there's an agent that you can go on YouTube and pick it up, said that his job was to go in and create dissension amongst the black power groups so that they could go in and wipe them out under the COINTELPRO organization. Now, here's the thing. I want to ask you a question, and you may be able to answer because I haven't been able to answer it. How can these poor black boys that don't even know how to spell Columbia, don't know where the hell South America is, how are they getting the drugs? And the other thing is, how are they getting guns when they ain't got no damn education and they're not employed? And they're getting these nice fancy guns. They ain't getting this run-of-the-mill Saturday night specials. They got good stuff. In fact, the police say they got better stuff than they have in their police officers. So with that being the case, when you talk about terrorism in the black community, you don't have to look no further than the government. Now, I give you this. I used to sit up at the Tesco flea market in Baltimore, and I used to sell black history books, tapes, gospel tapes, and all of this stuff. So a girl came to my table, and she was mad that morning. She had a little daughter with her, and I was saying, well, hey, what's going on here? She said, well, my boyfriend, I want him to get off the road. I said, off the road? What is it, a truck driver? She said, no. He works for the National Security Agency. And the thing is, what he does is dangerous. And if we were to get married, I want him to be the father to my daughter, and I want him to live long enough to see her become an adult. I said, well, what in the hell is he doing that's so dangerous with the National Security Agency? She says, what he does is, there's a team of them that goes all around the country, and they organize these gangs like the Bloods and the Crips. And he looks young enough, and the guys that works with him in these teams, he'll go on one side of town, they'll go on the other side of town, and what they'll do is supply these guys with drugs and guns. And what they'll do is they'll do a drive-by in one of the other's areas, and they'll go in and set it up to where these guys start fighting one another. I said, you got to be kidding. She says, no. And how she got involved with this guy, she used to be with the janitorial service there at the National Security Agency building there in right there by Fort Meade. And I used to serve in that area, by the way. I won't get into what I used to do. And what happened is, I got to thinking about that thing, and what happened is, evidently that little girl told him what her mother had said. Because from then on out, he used to come by my table, and he used to kind of quiz me every now and then, and try and get into whether that young lady had told me something or not. But I never would give it out. But now, if you think that's a far-fetched story, you know, you don't have to believe it, but all you got to do is look back. Most of the, and look, all you got to do is look at the terrorism around this country. There used to be a school down there at Augusta, Georgia, called the School of Americas, where they breed these terrorists to go in and carry out coups and everything in these different countries. And there's evidence and books that tells you that all of this was done. So now, when Don Lemon was saying that, I know a lot of these Uncle Stevens Oreos and a whole lot of these white, and let me give you this. You can go on YouTube and I'll get you the book. There was a white guy that wrote the book said that Nixon and Ehrlichman set up a plan to drop drugs into black neighborhoods because at that time, you know it, well, you might not be old enough to know it, but black folks was more or less organized with the civil rights thing. And their thing was to put drugs in the black neighborhood. They wanted to put, well, they did. They put heroin in the black neighborhoods and weed in the white neighborhood. And they created the drug war. It's on YouTube, too. You can pull it up. And when I was in the military, I witnessed that one night when I was coming back from leave. A white guy had a briefcase, and we was on a red eye, and I didn't want to sit beside him. He says, look, I got something in this briefcase that's going to shock the world. I said, well, I don't want to know about it if it's top secret. He said, I don't give a shit. He said, I looked in it. What it was, Air America, and you can ask any vet that was in Vietnam at the time, Air America was going into the triangle, transporting heroin out of the triangle, putting it on transport planes, bringing it over into America, and that's how you had the drug epidemic here in the United States. And you can believe it or not, but the thing is, he showed me that he, the vice president, was in on this thing. And the general, it was a well-publicized picture, the general that had a gun to a Viet Cong's head and shot him in the head, that general was the front man that was in charge of getting the drugs from the CIA planes and getting them to these different transport planes coming over to the United States. And you know the rest of the story. General Key, the vice president and the president at that time, was the biggest drug dealers over there and sending that stuff to America. Now, you can believe it or not, but Don Lemon was right. Whenever I see a white boy riding in my neighborhood, the first thing I do is I get out my guns because I don't know what his intentions are. And you know this race riot thing started with white folks going in black neighborhoods, terrorizing and burning up the black businesses and black homes in black neighborhoods. And I end on this note. The largest number of people that was arrested in the L.A. riots was white folk. White folks was in on those riots, too, but they don't tell you that. They were the ones that started this whole thing. So, and they were in on it. So now when you talk about rioting and terrorism and black gangs, you need to look at some of the government influence on this thing. And I get off and let some of your other people talk because I know I'm going to get some pushback.
Well, I agree with you basically 100%. If you look at historically in the United States, with the Native, well, from Columbus to basically every explorer that was so-called, they called explorer, that landed in the Western Hemisphere, who was European, they basically, which in the eyes of the indigenous culture, were terrorists. But it became terrorists like real fast. The Native Americans in the entire Western Hemisphere, to this day, a lot of them look at white folks as terrorists. Now, granted, you know, on an individual basis, we get different stories. We understand that part. But from a historical point of view, and then, of course, with your contemporary stuff, you know, with Columbine, Dylann Roof, so on. So you are, hey, they're facts. it's on the books. Now, I got a couple of statistics here. This doesn't have anything to do with maybe terrorism. Oh, and then Whitey Bulger, the late Whitey Bulger, now, what, 2 days ago? Well, first thing, even before 2 days ago, he was convicted of essentially, I mean, one of the things that he's known for is extortion, which basically that's terrorism. He got 2 life sentences plus 10 years, and within 12 hours after he was transferred to the Hazleton Federal Penitentiary, he was beat to death by anywhere from, I've heard one person to no more than 4 people, but they killed him. Which that's weird because that's on a federal level. I wonder how that whole thing went down. They haven't let out all the details on that.
Well, Brother L.A., go back. He was protected by the FBI when he was at the peak of his gangsterism.
He was protected by FBI agent that, if we're going to throw race in it, that grew up in his neighborhood, white dude that. And I haven't heard of a black person getting that kind of protection.
And look, let me give you this, Brother L.A. Let me say this, and I'm going to get off, and this is the last time. Down south, when the Ku Klux Klan was running rampant and bombing churches and killing civil rights leaders and everything else, FBI agents was right in the mix with those Ku Klux Klansmen. And you know, and I know, I don't. Now, you correct me if I'm wrong, because most of the time, you know, I'm real prejudiced. You know, so, you know, if I sound like a racist or prejudiced, then so be it. But the thing is this, Brother L.A., I haven't seen where any of these white terrorist groups like the Ku Klux Klan and the Nazi Party and all of that stuff have been placed on the terrorist list.
I'm not familiar with that either.
So, hey, that tells you something.
It does, and there have been a number of trials. I don't know how many, but I'm going to just pick one out of the thing. But the Emmett Till case, where that trial, you know, what really was, in my opinion, it may as well not even had a trial. Because essentially, you knew the outcome before even the first day of court. There was another case in, I think, South Carolina this young boy, a little dude, little black guy. He was maybe 14 years old, and he got accused of killing 2 little girls, and he got the death penalty at 14 years old. They made a movie about it or whatever, but I gotta agree with Don Lemon and you. I mean, homegrown. When it comes to home, we don't ever. I mean, what do you call it? ISIS and all these other groups. You really don't have to worry about them. We need to be concerned about what's going on right here in this country. Not to demonize all white folks, but I'm just saying statistically. You know, some of the stuff that's gone down major has been primarily white male.
Well, let me go on the record.
Any white males listening, you're welcome to come to call in and chime in too. You were saying that, Beza.
You may not, but I am. Okay. So now you have to be politically correct. So, you know, this is your show. So.
Well, no,
but the
facts are there. I mean, if we look at how this country, I mean, this country was basically, via the United States government, basically very predatorial, a lot of killing, a lot of genocide of not only slaves, but Native Americans were almost wiped completely off the map. You know, they're only a small percentage of the population at large. And statistically, let's see, incarceration, although on a federal level, let's see, what's the exact number? On the federal level, 58% of the inmates are white, 2.2% are Native American, 38.1% are black, 1.5%. Now, this is on in the federal penitentiary system, BOP, Bureau of Prisons. Asians make up 1.5%. Now, on Wikipedia, though, they get it skewed differently. All right, now, 64% of the general population of the U.S. is white, 16% Hispanic, 13% black. But the percentage in the U.S. of incarcerated population, 39% of the federal, I mean, of the incarcerated population, that means people in local jails, state prisons, or the federal system, all three of those combined, 39% are white, non-Hispanic, 19% are Hispanic, and 40% of the incarcerated population now happens to be black folks. So on a federal level, you have more white folks on the state, local jail, and state prison level. But, of course, that all depends on what state you're in. Because if you're going to Vermont, Maine, New Hampshire, Montana, Alaska, even Oklahoma, because Taft, Oklahoma's got two prisons. They got one for men and one for women. Now, I know one morning when I was out there, the prison, you know, cleanup gang for that particular morning were all white women. Every last person in that detail were all white women, and you had basically just one black guard who was the driver also. He was in charge of all them. It was all white women. Now, I don't know what the demographics are in the men's prison out there, but in, especially in the United States, because we're only 13% of the population in the United States, blacks essentially on a critical mass basis are only in a handful of cities. You know, I'm in Florida. So in Florida, you'll find them in Miami, although it's mostly Latino there, but Miami, Fort Lauderdale, some sprinkled on West Palm Beach, Jacksonville, the Tampa Bay area, you know, Tampa, St. Pete, those in Clearwater, or what do you call it, Orlando and Tallahassee. Okay, Florida's got 67 counties. I just named five or six cities. But out of the 67 counties, and I don't know how many towns in Florida, like where we have our 4-H, you know what? I haven't seen any black people out there other than me yet. I know some live up in there, but overall, you don't see them. So the United States, to a high degree, you want black, the concentration of blacks are basically just in a handful of cities. In a handful of cities. Okay, let's go to question day. Is Don Lemon, was he right about homegrown terrorism? Is that what we should be concerned with? We could even break that down, because in the United States, a lot of homegrown terrorism can be broken down by demographics. It seems like well, it depends on the history, the period of history of time. These days, it seems like people, when it comes to homegrown terrorism, attack within their own demographic. But historically, you don't even have to factor Don Lemon into this. Historically, you got to give it to the white man. He's done some terrorizing. From colonial times to Whitey Bulger are getting a beat down in prison the other day. According to what I've read, he was beaten to death with a lock and a sock for starters. Beat him to death where he was unrecognizable, attempted to cut his tongue out, and they don't know that they tried to gouge his eyes out or from the force from the beat down with that lock and the sock popped his eyes out. That's Whitey Bulger's White and Irish, and at least one suspect. I've heard anywhere from one to four people beat him, you know, and that was within 12 hours. Now, that's a demographic. Now, with a lot of the white gangsters, you know, I don't hear them going into crossing demographic lines. I'm sure some have, particularly if you go with the Ku Klux Klan. The Ku Klux Klan or people that in that ideology, they do cross demographic lines. That's what they do. Anyway, so if you got any comment on, you know, with Don Lemon, I got to go with Don Lemon. I agree with Don. I mean, statistically, you can't deny it. Can't deny it statistically. 314, Mike is open.
Well. How you doing today, man?
Tom can't complain.
And I can't start off my conversation like my friend, give him credit to deities, especially Jesus, who I have no need or recognition of. But those that do, it's perfectly fine that they are, and I congratulate them. But, you know, the definition of terrorist is put out by the U.S. State Department. Now, organizations, groups, individuals can label events and instances as a terrorist if they want to. But the definition for legal purposes, for you to be put in a court of law, they go by the definition that has been put forth by the U.S. State Department. And what is the effects of that, I guess it depends on where you are. If you in the Deep South during the time when you had, like in 1919, during the time of the Red Hot Summer, I guess you would call that a terrible experience.
Right.
If you was Koreans out in the L.A., riot during the experience with blacks, I guess they would call that a terrible experience. And, you know, it just goes on and on. Those that's in North St. Louis City with the killings that's going on about blacks, they would call that a terrible experience. I'll tell you something else, too. When blacks flee those areas and move, you know, into the suburbs, the organizations and social groups that would direct those blacks that's coming from the urban areas into those areas, and knowing they have no means to sustain that type of living, what to those blacks that's in those areas, what they are experiencing, I guess could be considered as a terrorist event. So I think it's more so based on how you experience. And yes, through their known history, and really you have to look at human beings, because you go back in history, the Aztecs, when they killed 80,000 reportedly in 4 days, well, the natives that experienced that adjacent to them, that was a terrible thing for them also.
True.
What Stalin done was terrible. What the Ashanti done to the Awe and the Ga, that was terrible. So it just goes on, depends on how you experience these things. Of course, the best defense for terrorists is to be able to defend yourself from them. And in the black community, when they experience terrorists, who do they call? They call white folks, white police department. Don Lemon would know because his lover is a white male, if I can say it like that.
No, don't say that.
Well, it is what it is.
Yeah. So does his lover use racial slurs when he's making love to him, if I could say it like that? What are you laughing at, Cummy? Shame on you.
That's me.
You know, it takes Bianca to just bring up something like that. God.
Well, you supposed to lay it out on the table. That's what you got to do. You know me, I like to tell both sides of the coin. This man's got a white lover, white male lover, and he's making a statement that he, like I say, he would know better. And we have heard about how white males, when they have sex with black women, how they bringing that out. Women have reported on that. So I imagine that the same happens to him. While he's making love, having sex with his white male lover, he's probably using racial slurs, calling him all kind of things. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, those things got to be said.
Don Lemon's, I never thought about this. I guess, so you're saying Don Lemon must be a catcher instead of a pitcher.
Well, he may assume the missionary style. I don't know.
No, I don't know either.
Or he may have a monkey on his back. I don't know.
Don Lemon should stay to reporting, hardcore reporting with zero commentary.
Absolutely.
He's just too easy of a monkey.
And generally, blacks are totally against that type of lifestyle until the advent of Barack Obama.
Oh.
And here he is. Here you got them that's all of a sudden coming out and now champion civil rights and things that blacks have been complaining about. I mean, come on. That's something wrong with that picture. I don't even want to have nothing to do with that. I mean, go to show you how things are all messed up nowadays, I consider. You know, it was a time I could let my daughter go into a female bathroom without worrying about a male coming in there taking his damn penis out. That's terror to me.
You know, you put up a potential whole new podcast where gays terrorists. Because essentially, you can't say anything negative about a gay person without some type of repercussion. Like, there have been black sportscasters. This one, I forgot her name. She was on ESPN, some one of those cable things. She's gone. Fired.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Don Lemon, he's still, I believe if Don Lemon was straight, I'm just theorizing.
He'd probably be gone.
If he said the same thing, he would be gone.
And I tell you something else. Joe Biden was down in Southern Illinois doing some campaigning. And he was at a iron workers, a local hall auditorium, Local 392. Local 392 is notoriously known for not letting blacks in their organization. And here's Biden up in there trying to get people. Well, it wasn't no blacks in there that I know of. You know, to get out the vote. So what I'm trying to say this is that when you get to a point in life, if you've been observative, you've been astute, you can see right through this stuff. That's just what it is, a bunch of mess. That's why I come out mm-hmm. voted for Donald Trump. Now, me personally, I voted because of the
Praise
issues.
Praise the Lord. Praise the Lord. Praise
I voted
Lord.
Because
Hallelujah.
Of the issues, not because that he... And like I said before, I'll grab some woman by the pussy. At least he's grabbing pussies and not dicks like Lemon does. But anyway.
Listen, man. Listen, man.
Let's go to the next 718 area code. Your mic is open.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Well, it kills me. Like, you know, I'm over here in New York, and when they had the World Trade, I stayed in Red Hook. You know, they made a movie called Straight Outta Brooklyn. If you're familiar with that movie. But now you talk about blacks, and, you know, when you look at the neighborhood, people is afraid to get on the bus. And I'm telling these people, look at these people. You ride a bus every day with these same people. All of a sudden, somebody runs a plane into the World Trade. Now you're afraid to get on the bus. I say, look, in our neighborhood, we don't have bombers. You know, you got American blacks. We don't do certain things. You know, a lot of blacks don't do certain things. I mean, the last time some blacks did something, they took over Trinidad or they did something like that in Jamaica, coke, them guys. But blacks don't do certain, you know, blacks, we're not into bombing. You know, I mean, over there, they have this thing that's going over there in Africa now. Certain blacks do not do terrorist acts. The most thing we do, you might as well call the neighborhood, they're narco-terrorists. You know, if you mess up your own neighborhood, you might as well be called a narco-terrorist, you know, homegrown terrorist. But they won't let us move in their neighborhood. The white people won't let us move in their neighborhood. But they let all these guys who blow up the World Trade and, you know, and blow up everything, move in their neighborhood, and they won't even let us move in their neighborhood. You know, it's so crazy that they let, you know, the terrorists move in their neighborhood, and, you know, and they won't even let us move in their neighborhood just because we black. But they let somebody come in their neighborhood who blow up the whole damn country, blow up the whole world, move in their neighborhood. And, it, you know, it's so crazy, you know? That's what I have to say.
Yeah, well, you know, like, well, now, what you just stated, like, if you go up into the Detroit metro area, Dearborn, Michigan, you have a large Arab population of people that are there with some white folks. And the handful of blacks I know that live up in that area, they don't like to go through Dearborn or Dearborn Heights. because based on what you just said. You know what? If there's going to be a, because no empire lasts forever. I'm just theorizing. You know what? The downfall of the United States will probably be based on race. It will be race related.
The people who are running action, yeah, I mean, you cannot tell these bombers they cannot move in their neighborhood because these bombers, they got stores. You know, they got money, and that's what the people look at. They don't look at, they bombers. They're just looking at the dollars, you know, and that's so crazy. They're looking at these people dollars, and they, but they're not looking at how they blowing shit up. They're just looking at the money. When you can move in my neighborhood, you got money, you know, and you're not black. So you, as long as you're not black, you know, you can move in the neighborhood. And you know, that's happening in Brooklyn now because a lot of times, the new places that open up, you see no blacks, they land in. They land in Hispanics, white Hispanics. You know, that's what I want to say, because you don't see any black, you don't see no Dominicans moving there, no blacks, or no dark-skinned people on anything close to getting dark moving in a lot of places.
Yeah.
Unless they have some type of voucher, you know, they come in the shelter. Mm-hmm. But that's what I'm noticing, and I'm 52 years old, so I can talk.
Well, you also got to remember this, in this country, and this goes right in with that color thing. In America, as well as other places, we're very class conscious, too, because let's take an all-white neighborhood of upper end. Well, let's go with Beverly Hills. Beverly Hills, that's what made the Beverly Hills village such a funny thing, because would they have let Jed Clamber and Granny and Jeffrey and Ellie White May move into that neighborhood had they not had all that money? Because even the banker, Milburn Drysdale, his wife, basically, money or no money, she looked good on the Clampers. So in this country, even if you are, I mean, even in the black community, you have the black bourgeoisie. They don't want to be hanging with the blue-collar folks. Let's go to our next call.
One thing before you go. You know, but the neighbor, the people who they letting come in the neighborhood, they let a lot of these white trash come in the neighborhood. You know, it's sad.
Now, I ain't never seen no white trash pull up in a.
Come to Brooklyn, you'll see it. They be all strung out and drug out on that K2.
Well, hold on. We don't have to come back to that. 407, the mic is open.
Good morning, gentlemen. This is Fiata in Florida. And let me just say this. Some women, when they give permission, of course, they like to be grabbed by the pussy. But the media puts a spin on everything that Donald Trump does to the negative. So I just wanted to put that out there. It's an enjoyable experience when you give permission. But we're in such a society where Don Lemon and all this, and this media is turning everything around. I want to put this question out to you brothers, because we got an issue with black people running for political offices and the media making the opponent a racist. You know, you're probably familiar with the situation in Georgia. We got this black woman running, and so many brothers are saying she's not qualified and she's got the wrong message, saying we should open the borders and bring in, you know, all these immigrants. And it's going to affect black people's jobs. So they're saying, but my sister lives in Georgia. But Kemp is a racist. And then the same thing going on here in Florida. We got con artist Gilliam running, and we got this other guy who's a racist. You know, that's how the political scene is right now. Anybody black running Democrat, and the other one is always a racist. So which is worse? To have these socialist-minded black people winning the election and bringing in immigrants and bringing in a bunch of increasing the Spanish population and affecting the jobs of black, or having, quote, a racist, which I don't believe these people are at all.
Well, sister, I want to say this to you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, you know, you have the guys who's going in office all the time, and then you hear the women saying, hey, you know, he drugged me up, he did this and that to me. But I tell you, this is to the brothers online, because, you know, I always say, I wish I could get a strong woman in power, you know, because, you know, Monica Lewinsky and Clinton, you know. So I say, hey, maybe I wish I could meet a woman who want me to eat her pussy. I can get a come up, you know. But you don't have that, you know. You don't have that. But I'll be the first one in line. I'll be down there on my knees eating some pussy all day long. But you don't have that, you know. That, you know, I'll be right there. That's right. I'll be fighting to be first in line to eat some pussy all day long, you know.
That, you know? I think I lost you there. I think I lost
you. Brother L.A., I say something?
Yeah.
Yeah, Connie, you were saying, Connie, your response to that.
Yeah, let's shut this door while we can. You know, I mean, we got offline here with Brother P.R.
But the politician, you don't hear no woman politician, nobody bringing a woman down. Once in a while, they have one guy try to bring his woman down to the his boss made a pass on him. I mean, my boss, a woman, she make a pass on me, I'm going to welcome it. You know, I'm not gay. I'm straight. I'm going to welcome that pussy all day long. I ain't going to turn down that pussy as long as I don't get no STD from it.
Okay, that's another podcast. What we're talking about today. Oh, let's get back on topic. That's another podcast. What we're talking about today is homegrown terrorists. Sort of maybe a de facto homegrown terrorism, the Me Too movement. You know, men do have to be very careful with their interaction with women. So would you consider the Me Too movement a homegrown terrorist group? Let's go to Viata first. Let her have her say, then let's go on order. Viata, your comment.
That's why I'm asking the question, are black people homegrown terrorists in a way, because they're terrorizing the society with racism as their opponent, and their policies are going to be destructive and harmful for their own people. So in a way, I'm seeing that as a terrorist, because the color of one's skin is in the black community is takes precedence over somebody who might be a better leader, but they're not black enough. And yet they're going to bring in, they want immigrants to come in. They want more Spanish. It will open the door for all the Mexicans and Hondurans.
All right,
and
where's the black people's
jobs going to be?
All right, what you're talking about is identity politics. But could you go back and answer the question? Would you consider the Me Too movement a terrorist?
What's worse to have a woman or a black man in power or have been in a position who's going to bring in immigrants and terrorists into the country all for the sake of socialism, or have a racist, so-called, I don't believe these men are really racist. They're just ignorant, and it's our job to change that.
The evil is even because what happened, you got a lot of people, you let them come in, they don't say thank you. They're not looking out for you like that. They're looking out for their kind. And you don't look like them, you don't talk like them, and they're not going to look out for you. They don't appreciate that you helped them got over here to a better life like that. They worry about their country, man. They're not worrying about the people who helped them get over here.
Is the bottom line, is it really about pure race, or is it about socioeconomics, classism?
It's about socioeconomics, but yes, the Me Too can be looked at like that, since we're broadening the definition of terrorism. But if you a male and a female come up and make an allegation when there's no proof to it whatsoever, and all of a sudden you guilty until proven innocent, well, yes, you can take that position and look at the actions against you as being terroristic.
Because she wants to train, she wants to womanize you. She wants you to go to jail. She wants you to become a faggot. She wants you to go to jail. You turn out to become a faggot. So that's what she wants you to do. Because a lot of they have no men at home. They're being raised by their grandmother, their aunties, and they're being raised by women. So what happens? So they want you to be womanized. Go to jail, and can't get a job, and be labeled as a sex offender. So what happened? They could be in power. That's how some women think. And you got a lot of men that suck up to that. They suck up to that. When a woman, it's always yes sir, ma'am, yes sir, ma'am, yes sir, ma'am. Women are the new masters. You say something against them, you fucked.
So,
that's
true.
Can I say something, Brother L.A.?
Yeah, sure.
Look.
Yeah, but
most of you aren't old enough to go back as far as I go back. Maybe not, I don't know. But whenever someone tries to change the status quo or try to challenge an injustice, there's always a pushback. That, hey, they're communists, or either they're terrorists. Martin Luther King was known as a communist. And most black folks that was out here trying to change the accommodation laws, they were called communists. Well, the thing is, they weren't communists. They were just trying to get justice and trying to get respect. Now, this women's Me Too movement, tell me if I'm wrong, and I want Brother Pionk and Sister Viata and the other brother. When's the last time you seen any of those people go into a church or either into a crowd of white folks and spray up the place? When's the last time you seen some of them go and bomb a gathering of people, heterosexual white males, at a football game or at a country music gathering? You haven't seen it. These people are out there protesting an injustice. Now, the thing I look at is this. Whenever you use violence to try and get your message across, that's terrorism. Now, that's a simple form of it. But until I see the Me Too movement and people in that Me Too movement go and kill a bunch of people that is opposed to their stance, then I can label them a terrorist. Now, getting back to this other thing, look, Don Lemon ain't the only homosexual there at CNN. You know, Anderson Cooper's a homosexual, too. He happens to be white. Nobody said anything about him. And, you know, we need to be equally critical of people when we get out there. I'm pro-black, which means that if you label me a prejudice or a bigot, so be it. And this thing about homosexuals being a terrorist group, look, these people have gained power in the way that blacks should have gained power a long time ago. They take their money. They support those candidates that is sympathetic to their views. Now, they go on both sides of the political scene. Now, I don't know if Brother Bianchi will own up to this or not, but you've got conservative homosexuals in the Republican Party, and they call themselves the log cabin Republicans. So, you know, I mean, this thing has been going on for a long time. In fact, Melvin, that was the head of the Republican National Committee, he was the chairman of the Republican Party. He was a homosexual and a Jew. So look, we got to really look at this thing like Brother Bianchi said. And
so what about the gay mafia?
You got homosexuals that stand up in the pulpit every Sunday too.
I go along with that too. I mean, but all I'm telling you is that these gays, the reason why they don't get rid of Don Lemon and the reason why they don't get rid of Anderson Cooper is because those boys got clout. And that's something that we haven't done. I mean, Brother Ellie
talks about
it all the
time. I respect them, but I don't accept what they do, and I don't want them teaching my kids. That's my prerogative.
These people have protected themselves from a lot of stuff because they, number one, they organize around their sexuality. They use their money to bankroll these politicians. They get into a position of power, and that's why come they don't get pushed around and get shot in the street like we do. Now,
and you know another thing too. They racist also, because I've heard black homosexuals and gays make comment on how they treated by the white homosexuals and gays.
That's right.
Human beings, man. That shit stuff is gonna happen.
But now here's the thing. Look, when it comes to blacks, everybody kicks us in the butt because the thing is we haven't consolidated our numbers to protect ourselves. And what we do is we join in on everybody else's movement instead of coming together to protect ourselves. And look, Sister Viata, you know, me and you got to talk one of these days because you don't let these men influence you into saying stuff that's derogatory to women. Let me say this. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, if you see a sorry woman, it's because a sorry man made her that way. And we men needs to be very respectful of our sisters because ain't nobody been more abused than our black women. And the other thing that Piarki said, and, you know, every now and then he comes up with a good one. He said that when blacks move into white neighborhoods, that's a form of terrorism. Well, the thing is, what's happening now? Whites are moving back and displacing blacks in these inner cities. Would he consider that terrorism with the gentrification that's going on? And he also said that the real hot summer, let me finish this, was a terrible thing. Call it like it is. It was terrorism. That's what it was. See, you know, we gloss over these atrocities that white folks commit against us and the violence that they commit against us. Call it for what it is. These race riots back in the 19 and 1800s was terrorism. And the thing is, for you to say it was a bad experience, stop poo-pooing what has happened to us. And let me
get one in there, man. You don't carry this out a little bit long. Because you started using the word terrorist when white folks started using the word terrorist. Blacks ain't never used that word. So why don't blacks come up with their own label instead of using what white folks put out there?
I think if you go back and look at what WB Du Bois did,
wasn't Emmett Till that 15-year-old, wasn't he terrorized when those white folks came for him that night?
If you look back in the past, you can apply that to it. But at that time, they didn't use the word terrorized. He was murdered.
They didn't use it. He was terrorized.
Well, Brother L.A., they had another word for it. They said we were attacked. They said we were attacked. No, terrorism is a new word now. But black folks used to say we're being attacked by white folks. So now, you know, we had our word for it. It's just that we didn't go in and use that word and make sure that it was in the public square, because nobody accepts our terms. That's just like look at the Holocaust of slavery. We call it Maafa. Well, nobody uses that term.
You know what Maafa means, don't you?
Dominantly uses it.
Maafa mean a bad experience, but the people that came in and burnt down Ferguson, that those businesses could say it was terrorized too, both blacks and white businesses.
Well,
and blacks was doing the burning down.
How do you know that?
Hell, you seen them on camera.
How do you know they weren't agents? Because agents.
Oh, well, wait
right
a minute. Now, hang on for a second. We got one in jail now, one young man in there. You know another thing too. Many of those outspoken ones are coming up dead, either burnt or supposedly somebody told me one was found lynched in the backyard. But the thing is yes, they was black, and they was burning down and looting stores and stuff, same way the Korean. So, you know, human beings do some terrible things.
But the funny thing?
I'm going to get off because I don't want to hog the conversation. Yeah, they do. But when you look at the way it's structured and the kind of stuff that goes on with the races, and look, I got to admit this. Who has been bumming these abortion clinics? And who have been going in churches and killing people because they were sympathetic to birth control? So with that being the case, look, L.A. said something one time that was very profound. He said, everybody has been shitted on. I'm not concerned with the rest of these people and how their situation is. I'm concerned with my relationship as a black person to this in this society. And the thing
right
is,
on.
We have
been, well, you know, if you take
we,
that position.
We have been terrorized to a point that, look, if we and look, whenever we try to defend ourselves like Robert Williams was where they came out with this thing, Negro with guns, what that white boy do is go in and change the darn law. In North Carolina, when we start shooting up these Ku Klux Klans for burning crosses in our yard, they change the law and say, look, you got to make sure the guy's in your house before you can shoot him. Because the thing is, they know we will lighten our behinds up. So when you look at it, terrorism is a structural thing that's protected by the dominant society. So I get off and let you talk.
Well, you know,
now,
like
now,
I'm trying
now,
to get some.
2018, black folks or any other folks, we have the ability and the basic raw tools to introduce and change legislation. What's happening in a lot of these highly populated areas where you have a high concentration of black folks on a numerical side, we have not gone in and bankrolled anything like that. I'll give you an example. We had Joe Brown on here earlier this year. He said it. When most black judges, when they run for office, elected office, they have to bankroll their campaign mostly out of their own personal funds.
Mm-hmm.
On a critical mass basis, us black folks really haven't caught on to the fact educated to the fact that, you know what, if we got to get together and we need to bankroll our local judges, man, we haven't really on a critical mass basis caught on to that yet. But then for that to catch on, I'm from the Booker T. Washington School of Thought. You know what, all right, let's cool out on the politics for a bit. Let's start the businesses and then morph those businesses into industry. And then once we have that kind of money, and I'm saying we can do this on, I'm not saying going out and march with, I'm not bashing going out and march with, you know, a million other people. But I'm saying if people can organize on a household basis, start a family business, morph the family business into industries, and then have some safe plans.
Well, you know,
we can probably do more things. On a critical
yeah,
plan,
you probably. Do have black groups that do the bankrolling of individuals
okay.
that's running for candidacy. But you know what happened? The other blacks were run by four or five different blacks against them, and you have no control over them. That's how that get loused up. I witnessed that bankroll. I witnessed the meetings where these things go on and the conversations be had myself. Hell, even Obama came to a house here in the St. Louis Avenue area back in 2007 when he was running, 2008. So, yes, that goes on, but you got those other blacks. I always tell you, all black folks are not the same. And
true.
Like
black
I mentioned, when blacks move into areas where they have an investment in property, they expect for that property to appreciate. Nothing wrong with that. They're supposed to do that. Now, they do have concerns about those that's left behind. But those that's left behind and the advocates for those that's left behind don't give a damn about them themselves. It's like these kids I told you the other day that's reading at a third grade level in this one school. 10% is only 10% that's reading at a level. The rest of them is below it. You know who's coming in to help bring those kids to reading level? It's white folks from Sigmund Aldrich. Blacks ain't doing that. Your conversation in the first hour is one way, but let me give you the reality. Let me give you what the reality is. Blacks don't come out and help these poor kids. It's whites that does that stuff. So when people say, like John Lemon, say that white males are the terrorists, then I'm experiencing white males coming not only in this school in St. Louis, they came to Chick School in Kansas City. They come to other schools from the university. These are whites that's coming in to do this. Blacks don't do it. And guess who in particular? Your black organization. And let me tell you something else. Uhuru in here in St. Louis. Hell, they put on a hell of a Halloween party for black kids in their neighborhood, giving out candy and stuff. A red, black, and green organization celebrating Halloween. So this stuff is all over the place, L.A. It's all over the place. The only thing you can do is make up your mind what you're going to do and go ahead and do it. Trying to be allegiance to one type of thought compared to another is fruitless. It ain't gonna happen. Like I told you before, when Claude Anderson say blacks need to put their money together, he ain't talking about the whole population in the United States. He's talking about individual groups of people, maybe 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6. And that's where it happens.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, numerically, realistically, and even 6 could be a stretch, particularly if they're not blood related.
But, you know, Brother L.A., look, you know, PRK brings this up every time. There are black folks out here doing good work, too. And, yeah, we need to do more. And, look, here's the other thing. It's only a small segment of any racial ethnic group that is doing the things in their neighborhood that needs to be done, like businesses and things like that. In fact, you hear it all the time. The statement says the 1%. And the thing is, it's just a small group of white folks that put that money together that is controlling and dominating the commerce in not only the United States, but everywhere else. So black folks are no different than anybody else. So get off this thing about, hey, just going ahead on and generalizing black people. Because the thing is, it's only a small segment of any racial ethnic group that's out here financing everything for the rest of the people. And you got sluggards and laggards in every racial ethnic group, white, Asian, sure, Puerto Rican, hell, what the hell it is. So with that being the case, stop generalizing and just go ahead on. Yeah, we need to do more. But hell, there's a whole lot of black folks out here doing some good work too. So now that might be in your neighborhood, but in my neighborhood, we have after-school tutoring and stuff like that that we finance. Maybe not in your neighborhood, but hey, but that's the way it is. So don't stop generalizing black folks.
I recommend, particularly to the youngins, the millennials, read Black Enterprise magazine, because Black Enterprise magazine every month has many examples of black entrepreneurs doing very well in their communities. And my favorite issue is their yearly Black Enterprise Top 100, which you probably have about four companies in there right now that are African-American that are billion-dollar companies. So you do have blacks. Yeah, because I'm tired of hearing stuff about sports figures and entertainers and
Listen, your guys are old and gentlemen. I'm 52 years old. What you think about the young people walking with their pants down? Look, I got to deal with this. Your guys, I'm not saying you're on the way out. You'll have grandkids. You'll have kids. But watch, when y'all grew up, y'all didn't, these guys, look what that's promoting. Look what it's saying. Okay, I'm into, I have nothing against the gay people, but if you have a whole generation coming up that want to be gay, they're not thinking about making any babies. Maybe they are, maybe they ain't. Maybe they want to turn the whole world, because the world's going to come to a stop, because man and a man cannot make a baby. And I think, if that's what they're getting at, what are they doing?
Well, I don't know what to say about that, but I'm going to make this comment here. When Don Lemon made his comment about white males, that's generalization, and nobody checked him on it and say, well, it's only a few. It's not all of them that's causing this problem. And I made specifically stated that I went to organizations, individual organizations, and asked them to help. And it's negative from them. But no, whites in this country, they fund the schools that the Muslims put their kids in, Carter Ritter, Trinity, DeSmet, Loyola. Those are the top schools. The Danford started City Academy. So those are whites that's doing those things. Now, I know blacks do a lot of things. Hang on.
But
I know blacks do. Hang on for a minute, sir. I know blacks do a lot of things. But I'm just letting you know what I witnessed.
But a lot of places overseas, they don't have homosexual because they get killed overseas. So they come to America where they can do it out openly, because overseas, if you do homosexual same countries, that's a death sentence. So a lot of places come over here. Jamaica, they against
you mean a lot of people come over here.
Yeah, a lot of people come over here.
If a country want to have that as their policy, that's them. They can do if that's what they choose to do.
Let me comment on the question about the black males wearing their pants down below whatever.
Puerto Ricans, it could be everybody. Puerto Ricans, whites, all of them doing it.
No. Let me give you my observation of that phenomenon. I'm 61.
Yeah, that's what I call.
Okay, I'm 61. I remember when I was going to summer camps, taking swim lessons. I'm talking about 8 years old, whatever. The way I see it now, this is the way LA sees it. By the way, the black man wearing the pants. Back when I was 8 years old, and matter of fact, if you go back online and punch up pictures of people like David Cassidy, the Osmond brothers, any popular white males back in, we're talking about 1967, 1968, those eras, they were wearing their pants or their bell bottoms slightly to their butt crack. That was the style for white folks, particularly white men. We're talking about 67, 68, 69. Now, in my opinion, what we see with black men, some black men, not all, wearing the, particularly the youngest, wearing their pants, I mean, some of them got up, down below, whatever. They've taken what white people have done from those late 60s, and they've exaggerated on it. Now, I'm going to say that to say this. In the United States, to a very high degree, many black people, not all black people, because Yankee is right, not all black people are alike, but many black people have embraced white people's ideals and gone beyond, they've embraced them and gone beyond what even white people want. If a white person's got a car, we have to have a bigger car. If a white person has a house, we have to have a bigger house. If you look at the rap or the hip-hop videos, it's excess. It's excess of the American dream. The American dream basically is supposed to be one house and a chicken in a pot. That's the American dream. Now we got, but we got to have a whole lot more than that, and I'm bringing it all that back, like I said. The pants thing, you're taking something that they started, because they went to the Academy Awards, and when we talk about racism, and they won't let us in, we're looking at other people's platform. How we can, somebody won't let us get into their game. If somebody won't let us play with their ball, then we call them a racist. We see names and we even try to extort. Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton are extortionists. Those two fuckers are terrorists, in my book. I'm saying follow the Booker T. Washington thing, start your own shit in the story.
And I agree.
Yes.
I agree. And look, let me add on to this, Brother L.A. How these boys, how these young black boys started wearing their pants below their butt. And look, this young man from New York probably knows about it. I don't know if the rest of us do. But the whole craze of wearing your butt where you can see your underwear was started by a white boy. Calvin Klein wanted to sell some underwear. And he had a group called Marky Mark, which is Mark Wahlberg now. He's an actor.
He was running
this group called Marky Mark. And what he used to do is walk around with his drawers showing. And he'd get out on stage and he'd drop his drawers and have them halfway his butt. But he was the poster boy to help Calvin Klein sell underwear.
You know, that
and the thing is,
right. You can go online and find that
what
post
happened
right
is,
now.
That's right. And what happened is, and look, here's where we get off track at. He knew he couldn't sell underwear because they had to be exposed to show his brand. So what happened is, after the black rappers saw that Marky Mark was getting cheers from the girls and stuff, the first guy I saw do this was LL Cool J walking around with his drawers showing. And the other thing is, they hired Jesse Jackson to go in and say that this fad started with prisoners wearing their pants below their butts. You know, Jesse Jackson was on the take for that. So that's where all of this started. And then we just grabbed a hold on it. And like you said, Brother L.A., we took it to another extreme because we thought it was cool because these black rappers
right.
was doing that crap.
Well, some blacks did it, but all of them don't, because my siblings don't walk around like that.
Well, mine
either. No, we didn't say all. Like you said, Pianchi, not all blacks are alike. Okay. So, yeah, it's not all, but, I mean, but it's visible.
Yeah.
We've taken too many of us.
Hell, you got some people in their 60s. You got men in their 60s walking around like that.
Well, I'm not going to walk around like that. But, you know, the thing that killed me when the woman didn't know the guy had some sugar in their tank. That's what kills me.
Well, see, that's a whole nother
project. And I tell you, another form of terrorism that nobody even mentioned, that's abortion. That baby feels that stuff that's going on with them. But that'll be another podcast.
Yeah,
but, man, today is Friday. I'm getting ready to cut out of here. I got things to do.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I got to move some lumber myself. So on that note, thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Everybody have a good weekend.